that motion I referred to earlier under advisement. All right, we're ready for the third case of the morning, Pena against American Meat Packing Company.
Good morning, Your Honor. Jorge Sanchez for the plaintiff appellant. May it please the court. This is a case where a judge incorrectly granted summary judgment in a Warren Act case by deciding hotly contested issues. The Warren Act allows a employer to avoid liability or shorten the notice period required by the Warren Act if they can cite to an unforeseeable circumstance that caused the closure of the plant. The Warren Act itself states, an employer may order a plant closing or mass layoff before the conclusion of the 60-day period if the closing or mass layoff is caused by business circumstances that were not reasonably foreseeable as of the time that notice would have been required.
Well, let me just say, it seems to me that Judge Castillo's fundamental rationale was that within the precision that the Warren Act seems to contemplate, which seems to be sort of a two-week window of when you might be able to predict that closing was going to happen, they in fact didn't know that this event was going to happen. The USDA and its inspectors had been around, they'd been issuing all of these NRs, they had essentially somewhat appallingly, at least according to the record you presented to us, turned their back on all of these problems. And so why would they have thought now was the moment that the axe was going to fall from the government as opposed to 2 months from now or 2 months earlier or any other time?
Well, I think that there's an issue there of notice. And I think that the judge decided this issue. It's a factual issue for the jury.
Well, what does notice mean? I mean, how certain did they have to be that USDA was going to come in and say, this plant is closed until you invest properly in the various upgrades that it needs?
I think that the argument that the plaintiffs make here is that the conditions in the plant were so egregious that no reasonable employer could possibly believe that this was okay. Now they say...
Well, suppose that's right.
Yeah.
But what if... to take what I sincerely hope is a hypothetical, the government is badly understaffed with its inspectors and it's operating under a philosophy that we want to let the private sector take care of problems on its own, and so we don't close plants down as a normal rule. I mean,
I don't think that's at all a stretch as a hypothetical. I think that it's very clear that the government is understaffed. That and part of the reason why they shifted to the regs is they from command and control to let you figure out a way to comply was to relieve this burden. But the USDA was not in the role of a police officer, a cop, to go around and saying, well, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. They don't have a staff. So what instead they did is they put the onus on the employer, on the company, and they said, this is the reg, what the reg said, that said each official establishment must be operated and maintained in a manner sufficient to prevent the creation of insanitary conditions and to ensure the product is not adulterated. That's pretty unmistakable as far as what the goals are of this regulation.
Well, I don't disagree with that, and I certainly don't disagree with that.
And they weren't meeting the goal.
Short, but... is there evidence in this record that shows anything about USDA practice in general? How often do they issue these shutdown, you know, suspension orders?
There is some evidence. It has more to do with the gravity of the response that they were taking. There's some evidence where Ohilski says, well, yes, a NR is a serious matter, and the fact that they bring it to our attention is a serious matter. the fact that they got so many of them so quickly, and that they didn't inquire about, well, why are we getting all of these? What do we have to do to fix it?
It has to do with the rodent feces.
Well, yes, no, and the answer there is back in the regs. It says, well, you have to prevent the creation of these conditions. And so one of the problems here is that the court also ignored the chief argument of plaintiffs, which was, this wasn't caused by the USDA. The USDA did not order AMPAC to shut down. The USDA said, unless you fix the conditions in your plant such that they comply with the regulatory requirements, you will not be allowed to operate until and unless you do.
But
and
there was no way of avoiding a certain subjective element to this, because the USDA is not in the business of expropriating companies. And if they say to a company, in order to keep operating, you have to invest another $3 million in your plant, it's really up to the company to decide, do they have that money? Can they spend the money? And so the company might suddenly say, you're shutting us down today. You're destroying 1.2 million of our product, and we just can't afford it. So since you're telling us we can't operate without the $3 million, that to us is we can't operate. But so there's that. There also is a legal question that I have for you based on the statute. What level are we talking about of likelihood of shutdown? Is it a possibility that the company's going to have to close down, or is it a probability? Because if it's a possibility, then I certainly can see that even as of this escalating number of NRs in September and October, it looks like a really serious possibility. But probability, given the track record, is a harder case for
I want to answer that question first. I think that it's reasonably foreseeable, and I think that is somewhere between possibility and probability. I mean, given the whole circumstances of the conditions within the plant, the regulations that are out there, and the fact that they've been cited so often, you have to actually look at subjectively what a corporation knew and what they were thinking. So it's somewhere between possibility and probability. I'm not sure that it's either one or the other. Now, the thing about the cause of the shutdown is the USDA did not say to AMPAC, you have to spend $3 million. They never, ever said that. And in fact, the $3 million quote is a quote that was supposedly the cost of fixing coolers, which were a major problem.
Well, suppose it's $1 million. I mean, the point is the same in a sense. First of all, you have to destroy whatever it was. Seems, on my recollection, it's about 1.2 million or so. Maybe a little more of product, but significant repairs are going to be necessary. And USDA did say to them, "You cannot open this plant up again until you fix the problem." And they then know that it's expensive problems to fix.
The point is that the plant got there as a result of its intransigence. They knew about the coolers back in 2000.
But that doesn't mean they knew it was going to close on a particular day or within a particular window of time.
I suppose
USDA kept turning their backs on it.
I actually think that the 14 days notice requirement that's referred to is actually when the closure is already planned. So if an employer 60 days before a planned closure says, well, I'm planning to close the plant in 60 days more or less, so they have a 14 day window to say, well, it'll be more or less this day. It doesn't talk about the circumstance here where the employer came from one day and said, that very day, I'm closing this plant down.
Do you think they had de facto made that decision in September?
I think they had de facto had a business policy that pushed them inevitably towards the USDA taking further actions, and that they did everything possible to ignore the clear signals the USDA was sending from the middle of the year, at least, about the same problems. I think that at any time that somebody fails to take action to remedy problems, to prevent insanitary conditions, and to ensure the product is unadulterated, yes, you're leading inexorably to higher and worse consequences. And in fact, the USDA regulations allow this to happen without notice when they ship adulterated product or when they believe the product is adulterated.
Right.
The other thing is that the WARN Act requires a employer to act as a reasonably prudent employer, if a similarly situated employer acting reasonably. And in this case, that's not at all a reasonable thing to do for a business to know of the regs or not know of the regs, but not comply with the regs.
So you would actually like to see the WARN Act, in a sense, amended or interpreted to capture, you know, the brinksmanship employer, like as you're characterizing this one, who doesn't really know that they're going to be shut down, but realizes that they're flirting with that possibility by failing to respond more seriously to regulatory warnings.
I actually think that the WARN Act regulations make it so that the defense that the employer is putting forward isn't applicable. The regulations say it should be a sudden, dramatic, and unexpected action or condition outside of the employer's control. This wasn't sudden, dramatic, and unexpected. They had a lot of lead time to find out that something more was going to happen. Each of these NRs said, if you don't do something, something more might happen.
But the problem is they don't say, we're going to shut you down. If they said that,
but the regulations tell you that they're going to shut you down, and they're charged presumptively with knowledge of their...
They might shut you down, yeah.
And the other thing is that that this is not outside of the employer's control. It's wholly within the employer's control to affect the conditions within the plant. I see I'm within my rebuttal time.
In rebuttal, and I will you may save some of that.
Thank you.
Thank you from the Scott Shul.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. This case is not about notice. It is not about inquiry. Is it about foreseeability?
But Ms. Gotcha, let me tell you what worries me about Judge Castillo's opinion. He seems to look at this entirely from the totally subjective point of view of this employer. And although there isn't a lot of law out there, it seems to me that both the regulations and the statute and other courts are trying to look at this from an objective point of view. What would a reasonable employer faced with that set of circumstances working with that agency have expected? And, you know, I think of, for example, the Third Circuit's case with the casino, the Elsinore case. There was evidence that the New Jersey Casino Control Commission had never taken the kind of step that it took now. So that really made it unexpected. We don't have evidence that I could find in this record about how USDA behaves, whether when one sees an escalating series of NRs like this one that starts in the fall, they keep notching it up so that it was the handwriting on the wall. We don't know if certain types of sanitary problems, such as the ones, I won't repulse everybody in the courtroom by going through the allegations, but such as these do lead to closure. I mean, it seems to me what we lack is the objective perspective that the statute seems to require.
In fact, there is a good deal of evidence in the record about the USDA actions. There was a well-established history here in this facility of how the USDA would act.
Right, in this facility. But the question is, should we use just the subjective test, which is what you seem to be urging, rather than the objective test? And that's what Judge Wood's concern was, and what my concern is, because we don't know what that means in terms of USDA. We know what it means in terms of this particular plant, but we don't know what that means in terms of their practices. And if we're supposed to use an objective standard, that's what's missing in the record.
Well, to the contrary, Your Honor, again, I do think that there is some evidence in the record. You've got the combined experience of the two principals here, 50-plus years of experience. They both testified that they hadn't encountered anything like this before. When they were confronted with the escalating enforcement actions of the USDA, they did consult with third parties. They did not just sit back and throw up their hands and say, well, we're stuck now. They contracted with
an outside... And those third parties, remind me who they were, the third parties they consulted with.
There was Echo Lab, who was the new exterminator that they hired, that came through and said, there are structural issues here, but we can help you to totally eliminate any problem.
Right, but that still doesn't have anything to do with USDA and what their policy is. Go ahead. And what was the next thing you were relying on?
I was going to say there were the two food safety experts that they called in. They did speak with an attorney. They spoke with the American Meat Institute. All of these people told them, this does not sound like a situation that should compromise your ability to reopen. In addition to the past practice...
And these people, I guess, had some expertise in the way that USDA works, or was there evidence brought forward that they made those comments in light of an understanding of how USDA works? Or was this all toward trying to get the plant back in order?
Well, I believe it was both. These were certainly experts in their field, in the field of food safety, people who had dealt with the USDA before. In fact, the attorney that they retained was an expert in dealing with the USDA. So they did turn to experts who had some reason to understand what was likely to happen in these circumstances. Beyond that, this is not a situation, again, where the employer was unwilling to do anything more. When faced with the escalating enforcement actions of the USDA, they, too, began to take additional measures to bring them into compliance. And there's nothing in the record to suggest that with these additional efforts, they shouldn't have been able to bring the plant back into compliance.
No, but when you say there's nothing in the record, that raises, in my mind, a burden of proof issue. You, as the employer, or the employer, your client, is the one who has the burden of showing that this exception to the WARN Act applies. The WARN Act is there. It requires the 60 days notice. And if an employer wants to take advantage of an exception to that, it's up to the employer to make sure that the evidence is there to show that there's some reason why that notice can't be given. And the language, as Mr. Sanchez was just saying, includes the word unexpected. And when you have this building level of NRs, just almost a flood of them, starting in the fall, as soon as the rodent problem seems to become a very serious one, then how, in a sense, can it be unexpected? Because in a way, all we're talking about isn't really could you give 60 days warning. In a sense, it's when you don't give the 60 days warning, you have to pay people, you know, for the warning period that you should have given them.
What was unexpected was that the USDA would act as it did and when it did. Again, it wasn't simply the suspension of inspection. It was also the condemnation of the product, and it was also the failure to engage in any sort of interactive process with the employer so that the employer could bring it around. And really the death knell for the facility was when, on November 15th, the USDA said, not only don't we accept what you've done so far, but even if you spend this additional $3 million and do this cooler renovation, we still don't know that we will be satisfied. That was also unforeseeable. It wasn't simply the NRs, but it was the actions that the USDA took in the final days that were completely unexpected and unforeseeable to this particular employer.
But that's where I'm uncomfortable with the lack of evidence about how often, I don't know, for example, how often USDA in a sense, issues recall, says that product that has already been through the inspection process now cannot be sold on the market. You know, as a newspaper reader, you know, I know it happens sometime, but I don't want, that's not acceptable evidence to rely on in a case. If that happens, you know, once every 15 years, that's one thing. If it's a routine step USDA takes in cases like this, that's another situation. We just don't know. And that would certainly go to how reasonably foreseeable that kind of step was for the employer here.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly that would be helpful additional evidence. And you're right, that is not in this record. But I don't think that it's necessary in this record, given that the way things looked in mid-September to this employer, you had a pattern that had been engaged in for at least we know the past year of NR and remediation, NR and remediation. There was nothing as of the 60 days before the plant closed that would have signaled this employer that was going to change in any way, shape, or form. As events evolved and things did start to change, again, the employer escalated its actions in response to the USDA. And it was really the confluence event that was not foreseeable that led the plant to close. So I do think that while the standard, you look, when you evaluate this employer's action, you do it from a commercially reasonable business judgment perspective.
Well, and another point, you keep stressing to this employer, which of course is what Judge Castillo was looking at, but in addition to the lack of evidence about USDA, there is very little, except maybe what you referred to about, say, the industry association, but experience in the industry, industry custom, I would think would be an important piece of this as well.
Particularly when, as I understand your client's position, they're indicating that they never knew that USDA could even suspend inspections based on the plant's unsanitary conditions. Isn't that one position they're taking?
No, that is not the position they're taking. Appellants rely on the testimony given by Dan Ohilski, who was president of the facility. He was not in charge of the day-to-day operations. He was not responsible for interacting with the USDA on a day-to-day basis. He got involved at the end and indeed wasn't even on premises. as a regular business matter. The evidence does establish that Dana Spinoza, who was the director of operations, was intimately familiar with the regulations, that he did understand that suspension could result. And really, Ohilsky's testimony was not that he didn't understand that was a possible outcome. It was that he knew that the USDA had, by virtue of the regulations, myriad enforcement actions that it could employ, and that it was impossible to predict what they would use at any one particular time.
Why aren't AMPAC's motives for closing the plant not genuine issues of material fact that the jury should decide?
There's nothing to suggest that it is anything other than what they said. It was the confluence of events that were precipitated by the USDA's enforcement actions. There's nothing to suggest otherwise here.
But who bears the risk of that kind of brinksmanship? Is it the employees who lose their 60 days? I mean, the Congress, of course, had a purpose in passing the WARN Act. Is it the employees who, henceforth, if the rule of law you're arguing for is the correct rule, employers can always just hold out when there are regulatory problems and hope that nobody drops the axe on them, and then if it happens, we'll just close.
But that's not what happened here.
Or put another way, what if AMPAC said, you know, we're going to invest this $34,000 to keep the plant open long enough so we can get rid of, at least sell the meat that was already processed, you know, the $1 million amount, you know, that could be a motive.
Well, they were prohibited from selling that amount. But in any event, I believe under this court's ruling in Jurcev, it is clear that the employer doesn't bear the burden to invoke this exception of showing that it cannot stay open for another 60 days. And what flows logically from that is that it's not required to expend vast amounts of money to reopen so that it can then stay open for 60 days for the purpose of giving notice. To get back to Judge Wood's earlier question, this is not a situation where the employer was engaged in brinksmanship. It was engaged in an established pattern of here's a problem, we'll fix the problem. When, again, the USDA actions escalated, the company cooperated. They did not just simply say, well, then we're done here, we'll move our operations elsewhere. This was a company that was trying up until the very bitter end to stay open, to save these jobs, to save its business. It had every reason to do so. It was about to start turning a profit when it hadn't in the past. And it was very committed to this facility, and the record doesn't call that into question at all. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sanchez.
The question of foreseeability is also clearly a question of fact for the jury. If the matter is whether it was foreseeable or not, that's a factual determination that the jury has to make. As to whether or not this was brinksmanship or not, that again is another jury question. And you have this kind of quotes from AMPAC when it's responding to these NRs and to the USDA's closure. Ohilsky writes, regarding NR 24 and the actions of October 31st, 2001. So this was when they first closed down, then there was cleaning, and then there was a second shutdown. This situation is being addressed, and not merely with window dressing. They're protesting too much here. We have begun taking both corrective in bold and preventative in bold measures. This suggests that the company knows that the USDA has finally caught them at their game, and that the very tone of that letter suggests exactly what I'm saying. They know that it's not they said there's this pattern. Well, there's an NR, there's remediation. When you look at what the remediation is on these NRs, they recondition the meat, but they don't stop the problem from happening. And the regs require them to stop the problem from happening. Instead, they let it keep going on. The question of whether or not, you know, this was an earnest employer trying to do everything it can, $34,000 is a drop in the bucket compared to the $6 million that they claimed they spent converting the factory from heavy hogs to butcher hogs. It's less than 1%. So, you know, if you do the cost benefit, sure, spend the $34,000, see what we can do. And if not, we have a great defense to say we did everything we could, and it gets us off the hook of the WARN Act. Compare the liability of the employer under the WARN Act to the $34,000 saved, and I dare say it's vastly disproportionate. A few more notes. the question of whether it was unexpected or not also has to do with notice. Were they on notice about what was required of them? Something can only be expected.
But I do go back to the point that although perhaps Judge Castillo expressed his opinion in terms that, that may have sounded too subjective, employers in situations with regulated industries like this one, part of your point is, in a sense, they always have a choice. You know, the agency will come along and say, here are the conditions under which you can continue to operate. Maybe you have to shut down for 2 months while you refurbish, or maybe you have to, you know, whatever they may be. And it's finally always going to be a business judgment, once you know what those conditions are, to decide whether you can continue operating or not. And it may be a business judgment that you have to make very quickly, because if you start pouring, you know, good money after bad, it doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help everyone.
MPEC cites the problem of the coolers, though. And this was a problem they knew about since 2000. They budgeted for it for during the whole year.
They didn't shut them down for the coolers since 2000.
No, but Ohilsky cites the $3 million repair cost of the coolers is this is the thing that broke the camel's back. Well, why didn't they do this reasonable thing earlier on, 2 years before they knew the coolers were a problem?
I can't imagine, but why is that notice that all of a sudden fixing the coolers is going to be sine qua non known of operating?
It's not, but it does show that the employer was not acting as a reasonable employer in that situation would have and should have acted.
Okay.
Thank you. If there's no further questions.
Thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.